3 years since the Taliban recaptured Kabul, the Afghan people continue to face challenges within their country, especially the women. Those who made it across the borders also face a wide range of issues, including forced deportations, struggles for employment, or difficulties in onward migration. In this episode of ICMPD's Migration Podcast, we mark 3 years since the takeover that has seen over 3 million Afghans leave their country for safety. Today we are joined by our colleague Samim Ahmadi, project manager for the Silk Routes region, including for his home country of Afghanistan. Samim, thank you for joining us and welcome.
Thank you for having me, Mike.
Samim, you continue to be very connected to the community. Tell us a bit more about how it is in Afghanistan at the moment since the Taliban took over.
Nationally, some of the issues unfortunately remain the same. We still experience food insecurity across the country. We still have the challenge of fragile economy. Provision of services by the de facto authority remains an issue. At the same time, the rights of Afghan women for accessing workplaces and education is another issue that has remained in the country. And regionally, we still see the issue of return of Afghans from Iran and Pakistan. Since the Pakistani government in 2023 announced the new plan to return Afghans, undocumented Afghans, in from September to December to 2023, close to 500,000 Afghans were returned. And now, for the second phase of the deportation of Afghans, around about 800,000 Afghans' lives might be affected, those who are living in Pakistan. The same applies for the Afghans living in Iran. Jointly from Iran and Pakistan in 2024, so far, over 400,000 Afghans have been returned.
So let's get a little more specific on the migration landscape in Afghanistan at the moment. What do we know of the pathways that Afghan migrants take?
In the last episode on Afghanistan, we discussed about the lack of legal pathways for Afghans. This does not apply only for after capture of Afghanistan by Taliban, but rather throughout the last 4 decades, Afghans had very limited number of legal pathways that they could pursue. And now, after August 2021, the legal pathways for Afghans have become even narrower. Previously, we had the chances of labor migration to GCCs and to other destinations, which has been reduced for different reasons, one being lack of documentation on passports and proper consular services. The focus has been shifted to resettlement programs and humanitarian admissions by different NATO member states who previously had mission in Afghanistan in the last two decades. Of course, the returns continue, but again, also we have internal displacement. We're talking about 3.6 million conflict and natural disaster induced IDPs, which again, it's a circle. You at the same time also have the issue of natural disasters and droughts, which cause as well the displacement that now we are facing the lowest level of water, portable water in the country. So all of these factors somehow lead to internal and external displacement in the country. In terms of outgoing migration, the resettlement programs and humanitarian admissions remain one of the major avenues. However, in the last 3 years, also Afghans, especially younger generation, are pursuing complementary pathways, meaning migration through educational and employment opportunities.
And of course, the situation of displacement and ongoing desire to leave the country are triggers for migration outwards. In our previous podcast episodes, we had our colleague Golda Roma talk about our migration resource centers, or the MRCs. In your experience having these consultations with potential migrants, tell us a bit more about what the needs are, the fears, and the kind of pathways that our potential migrants, or as we call them, clients, what are they seeking?
Previously, we had presence during the Republic time, physical presence in the country, the premises of Ministry of Refugees and Repatriation. Here, we had different functions, meaning that MRCs could accept walk-in clients who had questions, who would get appointment to have to visit the counselors, get answers to their questions, migratory-related questions. We also had public outreach activities, meaning that MRC counselors would visit universities, schools, religious centers, and communities to talk about irregular options of migration, talk about the dangers of irregular migration, and to support people, Afghans, to make informed decisions. Now, post-August 2021, the paradigm of the migration in the Afghan context somehow shifted, meaning that it focused more on the resettlement programs, on the humanitarian admissions by certain member states of NATO and other countries who had mission during the last 20 years in Afghanistan, meaning that individuals who had worked previously with them supported the missions of these member states in Afghanistan, became eligible for certain relocation schemes through resettlement and humanitarian admission programs. Now we have virtual presence. We do not have physical presence anymore in the country. We provide services through three main channels, which is awareness raising, online awareness raising activities through our social media platforms, counseling through the messaging platforms, and referrals to other partners where the scope of our work does not cover their questions. On a monthly basis, MRC Afghanistan reaches out to over a million Afghans through its awareness-raising activities. Council provides counseling services to, on average, to 2,000, from 2,000 to 2,500 Afghans per month. And we do, of course, referrals to our other international organization partners like IOM and UNHCR.
Just to get a bit more specific, what do they ask about at the MRCs? What do they want to talk about?
Well, we do categorize the number of inquiries we receive. Usually the inquiries we receive are from the former Afghan Republic's civil servants that were seeking protection, from the former Afghan National Security and Defense Forces who are in the neighboring countries. They ask questions about their legitimacy to apply for certain resettlement programs. We receive questions from Afghan women asking questions about educational opportunities and scholarships. We do get questions about available legal pathways to Europe for certain individuals, to EU territory or European territory at large. Questions about visa applications, be it a visa application to Turkey, to Pakistan, to Iran, to Australia, to New Zealand. We do have questions about the US's special immigration visa and humanitarian parole. We get questions about the Canadian sponsorship program. So these are some of the inquiries we receive on monthly basis. But again, it changes as the different topics arise. For example, if there is a change in the US's special immigration visa, then we have to do more awareness raising on that certain topic. And then that, of course, increases the number of counseling, and that also might increase the number of referrals. So it's a pretty dynamic where there's an interdependency between the counseling services and awareness raising, or vice versa, that we do.
What about the risks towards irregular migration, the hazards of crossing borders illegally, irregularly? How do they handle the answers that they get from the MRCs on that?
Well, it can be pretty stressful for our counselors from time to time, because imagine a scenario where you always hear about stories of desperation. People are desperate. Some of the Afghans do know about the risks of irregular migration, but also they still take their chances. I remember that at one of the Vienna Migration Conference's event, we had Dr. Abdullah, the former chief executive of the Republic. He mentioned that, you know, the situation is so bad that I cannot make an excuse for asking Afghans to remain back in the country. I mean, something along these lines. That being said, Afghans have used migration as the first and the last means of survival. So in some cases, they do know the risks of irregular migration. But from our perspective, the Migrant Resource Center, we see this as our duty to make sure that we provide the necessary information on the situation at borders and the countries of transit, countries of destination, to make sure that those Afghans who make decision to migrate irregularly, they know the risks and they are not unaware. And also we do provide the options of regular channels for migration might be, however limited, and probably this would be for certain niche group of Afghans with high skills and high education.
Since the takeover 3 years ago, you can imagine a high uptick in the inquiries that we receive at our MRCs, whether from the on-site back then MRCs or from the virtual setup that we have now. And so since the takeover, what have been the notable shifts in their narratives about leaving the country, or maybe the shifts in their concerns or the needs?
Well, logistically speaking, travel document passports have been one of the issues post August 2021. Afghanistan prints, the former Republic of Afghanistan printed passport booklets outside the country. And now that de facto authorities in Kabul are not a recognized government, hence they cannot print their passport booklets. Therefore, in the arena of migration and migration management, in the Afghan context, now having travel document, specifically passports, is one of the major problems. In terms of restriction of movements, now Afghan women and Afghan girls who do not have a male chaperone or companion are not in position to travel abroad for pursuing, you know, either employment opportunities, which was a lower number even previously, or educational opportunities outside the country. And also internal factors have impacted the some of the new challenges. For example, women not being able to access workplaces in general is another migratory push factor, where you have half of the population not contributing to socioeconomic development of a country. The households led by women, you know, what do they do? So they choose migration as a solution. So this is again another upcoming and new challenge. Or on a community level, where parents cannot see any future for their children beyond the grade six. So what do they do? Probably it could be another. It is another actually push factor, another challenge. You know, on the on Afghans to probably send their kids into neighboring countries for pursuing their education, or also lack of employment. So you see the spiral of different interlinked and old, existing, and new emerging push factors that come together and make the situation quite complicated.
Samim, let's dig deeper a little bit on the millions of Afghans still affected or still living in the country. What do we know about their situations?
Well, according to Humanitarian Response Plan for 2024, around 23.7 million Afghans are in need of humanitarian assistance and protection. And that means, among that, 6.5 million Afghan kids are at an emergency level of hunger. So these numbers are quite staggering. And for this new humanitarian plan for this year, the UN OCHA projected 3.06 billion budget that they need to reach out to 23 million Afghans, and only 20% of that budget has been met, and the other remaining 80% is not funded yet, which is a very concerning situation at the moment.
Given these numbers, how do they affect the push for migration?
Well, this is a catalyst and a push factor to intensify the existing and emerging migration push factors. Around 80% of Afghan population live below $1 income a day. Probably 50% of the country's population live under poverty line, which is according to the World Bank's data. The main factors previously were security and, or rather, lack of security and lack of employment opportunities during the Republic time. However, we see some improvements in security, meaning that the international community can access some remote areas now. However, still yesterday we had a suicide bombing right in front of General Attorney's office. So that indicates that the more the situation deteriorates in the country, the more Afghans would migrate as a means of survival and protection. Lack of services, you know, the infrastructure and the services deteriorating, where the water and sanitation systems, you know, shelter, lack of shelter, all of these will pile up and make a multi-layered complex problem that would push people to cross borders. But at the same time, then you have the other issue where the governments of Iran and Pakistan have decided to return them back. So imagine the situation of the Afghan of border crossing points between the three countries. Because of this porous borders, you can imagine that thousands of Afghans are being returned on daily basis to Afghanistan, and also thousands fleeing the country, moving to the neighboring countries.
You mentioned return, or in some cases even forced return. Do our MRCs, even now that it's on a virtual setup, how are they able to support the returnees?
When we had physical presence in Afghanistan during the Republic time, we did support the reintegration process in a way that we were referring some of the questions we got in relation to providing services, vocational trainings to some of our partners. However, in recent years, the number of questions we received by Afghans for return and reintegration are the lowest.
This was after the takeover?
This was after the takeover, yes. When we categorized the inquiries, the questions related to return is in the bottom of that list.
Could you tell us about the transition after the takeover, when we moved from a physical MRC to virtual setups?
Yes, before that, we had the COVID period. So one way or the other, we had to move to a virtual setup where our counselors had to attend some counseling sessions virtually through the messaging platforms or phone calls. But of course, we also had a hotline at the time. We stopped the walk-in clients and also doing public outreach activities. So we were in a way prepared to move into a virtual setup. The challenges were more or less the same with any organization or team that moves from a physical presence to a virtual presence. For example, some of our counselors are in different countries, working in different time zones. That is an issue. But I would also like to think that's also a positive thing, because we cover different time zones throughout the clock. If we have a counselor in Canada, can cover a PM shift for Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Iran time, while other counselors across Europe They provide counseling based on Central European time. And it's obvious that, you know, anything that moves from a physical presence into a virtual setup, it would have its challenges. Remember the Zoom calls when during COVID that we did not have any more in-person meetings. It was a quite strange environment and needed to some getting used to. So this period of COVID somehow helped us without so much of compromising in the quality. However, we still face some problems. For example, if you move to us to a virtual setup, and if your clients, not all your clients, know how to read and write information, and you have limited number of counselors who cannot attend all the calls that they receive for counseling, that could be an issue. What MRC now, virtual MRC, does, we record videos, we collect common questions, compile them together, and make interviews with the counselors, or record a video explaining the whole processes. And on a weekly basis, we also have live sessions. Again, during the week, MRC counselors and coordinator collect all the questions, compile them, and in the end address them, and on Fridays, for example, they address them. And this also provides the opportunity of real-time interaction with the clients, between the clients and MRC staff.
What was a typical day for our MRC counselors and coordinators back when it was still a physical setup, and now that it's virtual? Apart, of course, from the obvious that it's all done virtually.
Well, imagine a situation where you have a physical office that you go to on day-to-day basis. You have interactions with your government counterparts. When the MRC office, a physical presence during the Republic time at the premises of Ministry of Refugees and Repatriation, of course, having a physical presence gives you the opportunity of providing information through different means. For example, MRCs had walk-in clients that they would schedule a meeting or an interview or session with clients with certain questions, and the clients would walk in to MRCs to address these questions and get counseling session, group counseling sessions in coordination with universities, schools, and vocational training centers. MRC counselors would go for public outreach activities to discuss certain issues of importance at the time. Also, of course, having partnerships with different government ministries was something which was possible. Meeting face to face with partners, that was another a good thing at the time that they could have. However, since collapse, none of these options exist. None of these tools of communication exist, but also the requirements have changed. Now that we have a virtual MRC, without having a physical presence under the de facto regime, we can provide information the way it should be: neutral, reliable, on time. So that is also a positive thing about having a virtual presence under current circumstances.
You mentioned our women and female clients at the MRCs. Since, of course, there would be an uptick in the inquiries on pathways to leave the country, and the numbers show that, could you tell us about their typical profile of those approaching us, whether it was during the time before the takeover and especially after the takeover?
Well, before the takeover, you had your typical profile of migrants, that they were men between certain age and travel or migrate irregularly for the purpose of finding jobs to send remittances back to work for supporting families. However, the profile of Afghans migrating out of Afghanistan after the fall somehow shifted. It obviously included the previous profiles, but the new profiles emerged where young, educated Afghan men and women who were in need of seeking protection and who wanted to continue their careers, pursue higher education, or take refuge feeling vulnerable because of the de facto authorities. So it changed. You have a young women, you have women wanting to pursue careers, you have women basically seeking actually refuge, you have women wanting to continue their education. So it's a mix of different profiles now following the collapse.
And I'd imagine it's a little more difficult for them, for the women especially. We mentioned earlier the issue about not having enough passports being issued, but also the politics of them being not allowed to travel around alone.
For Afghan women, it has always been challenging in the country. But technically, the Afghan woman could even nominate themselves to run for the office in Afghanistan during the Republic time. They could be ministers, they could be journalists, they could be doctors, engineers, architects, and pretty much anything that they chose and could do. However, after the collapse, the limitations have increased on women. So now you have restriction of having jobs with the government, but there are exceptions even under the de facto authorities. You have restriction of women since December 2022 working with NGOs and international organizations or even UN. Education remains a major challenge right now. You have half of the country's population not attending or participating in socioeconomic development of a country, but also are at home. And they do not see any futures now for themselves. And this is why the questions we receive now from Afghan women are more inclined towards complementary pathways, especially through education.
Can we talk more about that?
MRC Afghanistan has a partnership with the European Union Agency for Asylum. And in this partnership, we do meet on regular basis where the EU member states and other participating countries come together to discuss the resettlement and humanitarian admission issues related to Afghans post August 2021. I must say that we are privileged to be part of this this platform where we function as an entity that creates coordination mechanisms among these participating countries on the resettlement numbers. Now, the different countries know the numbers and of Afghans that they have taken post August 2021, and also which country has what programs. For example, now Spain knows what Italy was doing in 2023 or 2022 or even 2024. Spain knows what Germany is doing. This coordination is happening through this platform and under the management of EUAA. And the other function that we have is to collect accurate and reliable information from this platform and channel it to their target group in different geographies for Afghans. For example, if Germany's federal admission program has a new change in the processes, through this platform, we can raise awareness among the Afghan communities or the Germany's target group that certain administration steps have changed. I'll give you an example. MRC was reached by one of its clients asking questions about an email address, which looked somehow weird. It had numbers and acronyms. And the client asked MRC counselors whether this email address was authentic or not, because there were examples of where certain individuals or email addresses had asked for documentation and later some security incidents had happened. And through this platform, we reached back to the German officials asking for the authenticity, to verify the authenticity of this email address and if the MRC clients should send their document. We reached back to that particular client, letting them know that yes, they can send their documents because the German officials confirmed. There are several instances like this where we were in a position to channel the, in timely fashion the accurate and official answers of the participating countries to their target audiences. So what it does actually is that when you have this sort of access, you provide accurate and timely information, which not only benefits the client, but also prevents the work of smugglers and prevents these vulnerable Afghans to become victim of a smuggling case, and in some cases, which leads to trafficking. And we have several examples of that in the recent years.
It sounds like the MRCs are doing a broad range of functions, not just in Afghanistan, but also across other countries where we operate. But what do we not do?
You're very correct when you say we do different things in different countries where MRCs are present. I usually refer to MRCs as Swiss Army knife, where you have different options and you can recalibrate yourself based on the priorities of people and the government and needs of the people and the government in certain countries. For example, in Pakistan, Bangladesh, Iraq, or Tajikistan, or Sri Lanka, the needs of the people and their respective governments are related to migration, labor migration, mobility, and remittances. So supporting the labor migration and remittances engine of the countries in those respective countries are priority, and that's what MRCs do. In the Afghan context, as I mentioned earlier, it's now, for now at least, it's the humanitarian admissions and resettlement programs, but at the same time, complementary pathways, encouraging and finding opportunities for eligible Afghans to pursue migration through, employment opportunities or educational opportunities. What we don't do is we do not enable people to migrate irregularly. What that means is that, anyway, when people make decisions that they want to migrate irregularly, there's nothing that stops them because they're moved to that edge that they make to sort of desperate decisions. But what from our side we want to make sure is that we do provide them with accurate information. We want to make sure that they are aware of the options they have available in relation to migration. And we want to make sure that certainly they know about the risks that they're going to take, so that these decisions are made in an informed manner, that they know of the consequences. At the same time, our work is also to tackle and fight the online work of smugglers. Here, of course, we do not encourage people to make use of smuggling services, which puts them in a very, very vulnerable situation. We have different examples and cases that have reached to us where in the transit countries, these smuggling cases have turned into kidnapping and asking for ransom, forced labor, which are trafficking in human being cases. So they've turned from smuggling to trafficking cases.
Or violence,
yes.
Samim, could you walk us through some of our success stories that we have?
Yes, of course. As I mentioned earlier, that we shifted our focus on supporting the complementary pathways, be it through employment opportunities or educational opportunities. Therefore, our success stories also rotates around this narrative. We have examples of Afghan women reaching out to our MRC Afghanistan, asking questions in relation to scholarship opportunities, where they received consultation and information from our counselors and secured themselves seats at universities in Iran for their master's degree. And this has happened through reaching out to MRC, asking questions and guidance, and basically listening to our consultations.
What about women from Afghanistan in the EU?
Definitely. Last year, the Afghan female students who had come previously to the Central Asian countries in Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, and Kazakhstan, and wanted to, through EU-funded educational programs implemented by UNDP, once their program was concluded, they were asked to leave back to Afghanistan. And at the time, of course, the country had collapsed and the de facto authorities have taken control of Kabul, and these female students could not go back. So through EUAA's platform and our partnership with the different EU member states, we reached out to different countries explaining the situation, and finally, with the generous decision that the then Spanish government made, some of these students moved to Spain to continue to pursue their education. That is one of the examples that I'm very much proud of our work.
What's next for MRC Afghanistan?
We have shifted our focus on not only providing information and doing awareness raising and counseling or referrals, but also focus more on complementary pathways, which entails obviously educational pathways and employment pathways. Here we have established a stakeholders group from Germany, from Portugal, from Spain, and as well as from Australia, that we meet on regular basis to discuss the issue of Afghan women's education, but also employment, and how we could synchronize our efforts and joint forces to support the educational pathways for Afghan women. And at the same time, MRC independently wants to conduct soft skill training for the same target audience, where we would like to support young Afghan women and men on how to take advantage of the scholarship opportunities that are available outside Afghanistan, to employment opportunities that exist, however limited that might be. Further, diaspora engagement remains a very crucial topic that we would like to explore and go down this avenue more intensely. For example, we have established contacts with diaspora communities in the Netherlands, Denmark, Germany, on how these communities could support the newly arrived Afghan families, be it in terms of administration work, be it in terms of language classes or finding employment and many more things. So these are some of the avenues that we would like to explore more in the upcoming years. It's very important to note that when we talk about MRCs, it's not only MRC for Afghanistan. We do have MRCs in the Silk Routes region and Eastern Europe and Central Asian region as well. For example, under PROTECT project, but also we have MRCs in Pakistan, MRCs in Tajikistan, in Kyrgyzstan, and in the future also there will be MRCs in Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan under this particular project, which is EU-funded project. And as I mentioned earlier, in every country, the functions of MRCs and the ways and methodologies of reaching out to their target audience differs, their messages differ, because every country's priorities and needs are different.
All right. On that note, Samim, thank you very much. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Mike.
This 3-year mark since the Taliban takeover is not exactly an ideal milestone. The events happening in Afghanistan remind us of how outward migration is easily triggered, but it also shows that given the right channels, the appropriate opportunities, and the safe environment, people will always find ways to thrive. As we continue to find innovative solutions for migration programs and policies that put people at the heart of what we do, we also take stock of our tireless MRC colleagues who continue to build on their experiences, perspectives, and even personal connections to support their communities on the ground, even from across different time zones. This has been another episode of the Migration Podcast by ICMPD. For more insights and expert talks on migration, subscribe to our podcast and follow us on social media. Thank you for tuning in, and until next time.